Welcome to the Real Life English Podcast, where we help dedicated English learners just like you cultivate the courage, the confidence, and the skills that you need to understand real life native English, to communicate clearly with people from all around the world, and to make your life an epic global adventure. Now, are you ready to go beyond the classroom and start living your English? Can I get an aw yeah? You've been lied to. The way most of us were taught languages in school makes you sound like a robot when you speak. It's nothing like how people speak in the real world.
That's why in today's episode, we will teach you some tips and tricks to sound more natural when you speak English. As a bonus, this will also help you better understand some differences between formal and informal English.
Yeah, boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, convenient, and
modern
way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to it while you're stuck in traffic, riding your bike, throwing some weights around, or even
cooking your favorite meal.
I'm joined here in the Cross Atlantic studio by the one and only Axel Pose. How's it going, Thiago?
Hey, Ethan. Hey, everyone. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
You've just come back from some vacation. You've got more of a glow about you.
I did, yeah. It feels good to be back, but you know, it was also good to be off for a couple of days and rest.
Get some R&R. Have you heard that expression before?
R&R? I'm not sure. What does that mean?
R&R is rest and relaxation.
Oh, right, yeah. I was thinking of rest, but the second R, you know, I wasn't sure. So rest and relaxation, right?
Exactly.
Nice. Yeah, I did get some R&R, yeah.
That's what we'll say a lot when you're on, you need some vacation to get some R&R.
Yeah, that's it's a nice reduction there, abbreviation, right?
Exactly. It's both an abbreviation and a reduction, because it's like the and, it's R and R, but we reduce the and to just an N, right? So it's R&R.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds cool. Yeah, nice.
Which is exactly what we're going to be talking about today is school English versus street English. So first of all, what do we mean when we say school English, Thiago?
Well, what we mean by school English is the traditional English, right, that you learn at schools, yeah? Usually, this type of English is focused more on textbook and grammar type of content. Also, there's a lot of focus on formal English, academic English. So that's what we mean by school English.
Yeah, totally. So it's pretty much all of us have probably experienced that at some point where you're just learning a language to take the test, to pass the test, which then I think probably also a lot of us have had the experience of just disappointment when you actually go out into the world, you're trying to use that language and you can't understand, you can't speak. When I studied in high school, I studied German and I got the experience to go to study abroad in Germany. And I just remember the first day there, I had a good base of vocabulary and stuff, but when I'd say things, people couldn't understand me because my teacher had never taught pronunciation. So that would be the street English that you would need, or street whatever language you're learning, mm-hmm. is what's spoken on the street. And of course, this could be by natives. If you go to a native country, that is important that people understand you, that you can understand them. But ultimately here, you know, English is the global language. And so street English also has to do with being able to be understood and understand anyone, which oftentimes we also refer to as real world English.
So it's not necessarily about gang English, right? Or rap hip hop English, right?
Exactly, yeah. Not to be mixed up with rap culture. You don't have to be using some street slang or anything to speak street English.
So it's more the day-to-day English that we encounter, yeah? When we travel, when we work in an English environment, right?
I think it also can refer to maybe a sense of confidence and a sense of naturalness when you speak, that you're not too stiff, you don't speak like a robot, which generally is kind of the consequence if you've only studied in a traditional school. Your English will be very robotic and it won't sound very natural like you'd want to be able to communicate well with people. So what exactly would you say is wrong with school English?
One point that we have listed here, Ethan, is that you tend to sound slower, right? If you speak thinking of school English or speaking the English that you learn in traditional schools, because your delivery, the way you speak is usually slower. You tend to pronounce every word in a sentence separately, you know, and as a consequence, you feel unnatural. Yeah, I mean, you feel unnatural and it sounds unnatural as well. to the person who's listening or talking to you. And a big problem of that is that usually you don't train your listening, right? Because you say things like, I went to the movies last night. You know, it's okay, mm-hmm. but it sounds too stiff, yeah, like you just mentioned, or slow, yeah, instead of maybe say, I went to the movies last night, right?
Yeah, my first experience teaching English was in kind of a more traditional school where we had to follow the textbooks, and there was like a CD included, you know, that you had to like play for certain exercises and stuff. And I just remember these CDs, like the situations would sound so unnatural. So it's like they're setting you up kind of to fail in that sense, because, you know, you're listening to an English that isn't realistic for what you'll actually encounter when you're watching a TV series or a movie, or even like traveling or meeting an English speaker in your city. The consequence of that is just that you're going to feel panicky. You're going to feel fear, you know, when you actually hear English as it's really spoken. So you have to practice as you play, you know, you have to be setting yourself up for success when you get in those situations with those people who are speaking fast, who are connecting their words. Which is exactly what we'll talk a bit more about today.
By the way, Ethan, I think you used a very nice phrase there, an expression, right? You have to set yourself up for success. Is that it?
Ooh, exactly. So if you set yourself up for success, it's basically you're doing the things that are necessary for you to be able to achieve success. So the things in learning English that would set you up for success is learning by listening to music, watching your favorite TV series, movies. Of course, you can have help like on learning a TV series, because like the first time you watch it, maybe you'll lose a bunch of things. But the point there is that you're actually listening to the English that you want to be able to understand. Another thing I've noticed that a bad habit that most English learners and learners of any language get is processing the target language through their native language. And this is because most schools will kind of teach through translation instead of having it be a real immersive experience, which is harder when you're first starting out, but it is possible to have more and more immersive experiences. So you're breaking away from thinking first in your native language and then translating, which also contributes to speaking slower. The other bad habit that people will get from this is pronouncing things like they would in their native language. So I know for Spanish speakers, for example, come from a phonetic language. So everything, pretty much, as long as you know the pronunciation of the alphabet in Spanish, then you can see any word, even if you don't know it, and you'll know how it's pronounced. But in English, being that it's non-phonetic, even a native speaker can see a new word and not know how it's pronounced. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So obviously, when you're an English learner, this is really making things quite difficult for you. But one way to break away from this is just recognizing, you know, that it's not pronounced like your native language, and to always seek out what's the correct pronunciation words and learning with your ears, not with your eyes.
Yeah, a funny thing about that, I have had experiences with students in the past like this. We are having the class, right? And then sometimes I would read something out loud from the material we are covering, and then the student wouldn't get it the first time, you know? So the student would have to read, you know, actually to understand. Like, you know, I would ask a question, yeah? And the person would go silent, right? And then the person will read the question and then, oh, okay, I understand. And then you become too dependent on what you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is definitely a problem of focusing too much on this kind of, let's say, methodology, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you start to focus more on the connected speech, when you start to focus more on listening to things and really training your ears, it will become easier and easier. So I think it's not to say that if you've been learning like that up to this point, you can still train it. It's not too late, but
yeah,
it is important that you start challenging yourself in that way. And Thiago, would you say is it a big problem that schools focus so much on grammar? Like, is it bad to learn grammar?
I don't think it's bad to learn grammar at some point, but I think there's too much emphasis on grammar, yeah, in traditional schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes away that naturalness, let's say. I don't know if that word exists, but, you know, the naturalness of, you know, mm-hmm. communicating. Because if you always think of rules and structures when you are speaking, that's going to limit your fluency, for sure. We have been discussing about the real life way a lot, right, Ethan? And
right.
One of the things we believe is that it is important to have this time in your routine to study grammar and be more deliberate with it, but not right away. Yeah? It's something that happens a little bit later, yeah, down the road. So at first, you focus on communication, improving your confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Listening skills, pronunciation. And then when you already have some sort of, let's say, conversational skills, then you can be a little bit more deliberate right? And study some grammar, yeah? So it's not to say that grammar is not important, but the overemphasis that traditional schools usually give to it is an issue, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely what's easiest to teach, like with the textbook and stuff, just to have people memorizing grammar rules, memorizing vocabulary, but then people understand you even if you say he go instead of what would be correct, he goes. People will still understand what you mean, right? Mm-hmm. So the focus should be first on communication, and then later you can, once you've like gotten that real base of communication, the grammar will make so much more sense to you.
Yeah. And maybe even when you get to studying grammar, maybe you don't need to necessarily learn the rules of a certain tense or a certain structure. I guess maybe the function, learning the function could be more beneficial to you. So, for example, instead of focusing on, oh, I'm going to learn the first conditional. Yeah. I mean, what's that, right? I mean, you can focus on, I'm going to learn how to threaten someone. You know, that's the function. That's the situational context, right? In which you would use that structure. So, okay, how do I threaten my kid when he's not obeying me? You know, okay, if you don't obey me, you will go to bed now. Yeah. You see, that's first conditional, but you're not focusing on first conditional. You're focusing on the context, right? On the function of that structure, which in this case is to make a threat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully not the biggest problem of most of our listeners is having to make threats in English, but
yeah.
You never know when you might need that.
Maybe if you are a parent, you could, but yeah.
if you're teaching your kids English, I think it'd definitely be, I'm sure that will come in handy.
Yeah.
All right, so now we're going to give you some tips to actually start speaking street English or more real world English so that you can sound more natural and confident when you speak. So what's the first tip that we have for them?
So the first tip here is reduce prepositions. For example, the preposition to many times gets reduced to a to instead of to. So instead of maybe saying easy to do something, I would say easy to. Easy to do something or go to the beach, right? And there's even more of a reduction here because you could reduce it even more and it sounds like a da. Right? Mm-hmm. So you go to the beach, for example, instead of go to the beach, or something is easy to find instead of easy to find. So that is one example with to. Any other examples you can give, Ethan, with that r sound or t sound?
Yeah. You have, it still would be with the to, right? But we have really common ones like gotta, wanna, gonna, that are when you got to, want to, going to. That we reduce, I mean, going to, it's like we reduce it quite a bit because we take out a bunch of the sounds there and it just becomes gonna.
Yeah.
So knowing these, you don't necessarily have to speak them, but you're going to hear them all the time. If you're watching a TV series, if you're listening to a song in English, you're going to hear them being used all the time. So at the very least, you should be able to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
I think something kind of similar is of also reduces quite a bit, almost in the same way that a lot of times it'll just become of or just a schwa sound. And so, you know, instead of saying front of, like in front of something, we'll say in front of something.
Mm-hmm. In front of, right? In front of you. Yeah?
Yeah. It's right in front of you.
Not even you. Yeah? You reduce it to yeah, right?
Yeah.
In front of you. Oh, yeah. It's exactly. In front of you. Oh, my God. Yeah. We have another one here. Yeah. She's the queen of England she's the queen, right? She's the queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. Which is, that's good to know, like, you know, of some place, I don't know, like it's the traditional dish of my country. You could say it's the traditional dish in my country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really reduced. That actually reminds me of that famous song by Guns N' Roses, right? Sweet Child of Mine. Yeah, because the song is Sweet Child of Mine, but the song is already reduced there. Yeah, Sweet Child of Mine, right?
Exactly. So,
listener, in case you have never made that connection, the in that song is of, right? Sweet Child of Mine, right?
Yeah. That's a great example too, because it's directly from, you know, a lot of people listening, maybe you are a Guns N' Roses fan. Guns N' Roses, even the title is Guns and Roses, the end there is and, right? Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
So like in the media, you'll see this all the time when you're listening to music.
Yeah.
Another really interesting point here we have of connected speech is when you have kind of sound morphing.
Mm-hmm.
So this happens sometimes, for example, when you have a T plus a Y or a D plus a Y. So if I wanted to say like, I got you something, there's a T in got and a Y in you. And so we'll reduce that to I gotcha something. Mm-hmm. So we're actually reducing the you there too to ya. So gotcha. I gotcha something.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. You know, that reminds me of another song, yeah, but I don't remember the group, yeah, because it's not really, you know, my cup of tea. But by the way, guys, you see, there's a connection there, yeah? Cup of tea, cup of tea.
Cup of tea. What does that mean if something's not your cup of tea?
Yeah, it's not my thing. It's not something I like or I am familiar with, yeah? Mm-hmm. But what is that song called, Ethan? The one that goes, don't you? Don't you wish a girl who was hot like me, yeah. You know? Don't you? Right?
Who That's sings like that? A 90s song, right?
Yeah.
Is it? I have no idea. I think it's kind of like a one-hit wonder.
Yeah. I think it was something Dolls, you know, like Pussycat Dolls or something like that, you know?
But it could be.
The song is don't you, right? Like don't you. And there is this sound that you are describing, right? The cha, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's the Pussycat Dolls.
Right, right.
And it's even called Don't You, which is don't you. That's a great example. You're chock full of them today.
Yeah. When it comes to music, you know, I'm kind of a walking, what do you call it? A walking, I don't know, almanac or encyclopedia?
Encyclopedia, maybe.
Yeah, encyclopedia is better, yeah.
The music Wikipedia.
Yeah. But a similar morphing happens with D plus Y, right, Ethan?
Right. So you could have, for example, had you. I don't know, like, had you seen it, could become had you seen it, had you seen it, or had you seen it.
Yeah, another example that I really like to give when I'm teaching this is what did you, right? What did you do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, many times you hear what you, right? What'd you do?
What'd you do?
Or yeah. What'd you see at the cinema, right? What'd you see? Like, what did you see? Yeah?
Yeah, and that's a super reduction because it's three words just becoming... sounding like just one word, right?
Yeah. So you see, I mean, the point here with connected speech is focusing on clusters of sound, right? Like groups of sounds, yeah? Instead of looking at each word individually, as school English usually encourages you to do, right? You are focusing on the whole sound that maybe a phrase has. So sometimes a short phrase could have just one big sound, right? To be pronounced. Yeah.
Yeah. There's another really good song example now that we're giving those is, you know, the song like Bad Boys. It's like bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do?
Uh-huh.
So it's like, whatcha is what are you in that case? What you gonna do?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the don'tcha, but it's three words. What are you becomes whatcha gonna do?
It's true.
So the whole thing there that you would learn in school is what are you going to do? Like, I don't know. What are you going to do if it rains this weekend, mm-hmm. for example? Would become, what you gonna do if it rains this weekend?
Yeah.
So you can see there, if you're depending too much on the school English, it's like you're not gonna know what hit you when you actually hear it in the real world.
So what you're gonna do, what, the R even disappears there, yeah? It's a whatcha, right?
The R disappears, yeah.
What you gonna?
What you gonna do?
What you gonna? Is that it?
Exactly.
What you gonna do, yeah?
Almost sounds like you have to say like, you know, bless you or Gesundheit.
What you gonna do? You know, like, what you gonna do? You know, like, yeah.
It's a good way to remember it.
But, you know, I something that I usually tell my students, Ethan, is it's not really necessary to speak that way. But the cool thing is that if you make a point of speaking this way more often, you will understand more easily because it's like pairing, you know. For example, going back to the two example, yeah? We listed an example here, which is, I need to go to the store. And then we just discussed that the two many times becomes the, right? So you would hear, I need to go to the store, right? You don't have to speak, I need to go to the store. But if you practice speaking that way, very likely when you hear someone saying, I need to go to the store, it's going to be much easier for you to understand it because there is a match there, yeah? What you hear matches with what you speak. Yeah, I guess many times the learners, they speak so differently, right, from what they hear, that how can they have some sort of base to, you know, understand and compare, you know?
It's a good reason, yeah, to try, at least like when you're home alone, like maybe if you're having a conversation, it's too much to try to think about saying what you're going to do if it rains this weekend. But when you're home alone practicing, you could, you know, as you're listening to us, you could pause it and say, what you're going to do this weekend, maybe go back, listen to it again, and then say it yourself again, and kind of just practice this so that you're kind of sending signals to your brain to, like, you know, be ready to hear that in different situations.
And it's really kind of exercise, right? Because you are kind of exercising your mouth or tongue, right? You can start slowly, yeah? Like, you know, I need to go. I need a go, right? And then I need a go to, I need a go to, you know? It's really getting your tongue used to it, right? To this flapping and these connections, yeah? It's really a workout. But then, you know, the cool thing is that later you can actually choose where you want to sound more connected and where you maybe don't want to sound more connected. For example, another example that I just thought of here is the word international, right, Ethan? Sometimes we hear international. Is that correct? International?
Right. Yeah. When you have that NT in a lot of words.
Yeah. So, for example, for me, I mean, I feel weird. Personally, yeah, speaking international, I think it's just too much for me, you know, so I don't have a problem with speaking international, but I understand when someone says international. So later, if you study connected speech enough, you can actually choose, you know, what makes sense to you to really speak more connected and what doesn't, yeah? So you don't have to connect everything, but ideally you should try to be connecting as much as you can, yeah? And then you take your liberties later, yeah?
Totally. So mostly we've talked about like pronunciation, connected speech, sound morphing, things like this, but it's not just about these kind of things. Street English also has to do with the words that you choose to use. So probably everyone listening to this was taught in school or has heard at some point, you know, that if someone asks you, how are you? You say, I'm fine. And you? Which if you go to the States, if you go to the UK and you hear people introducing themselves or seeing a friend or something like that, you'll almost... I'm not going to say you'll never hear this because you might, but you'll almost never hear this. And there's nothing wrong if you say that. Of course, like, I'm fine and you, it's okay. It's not, people aren't going to like shun you. You know, they're not going to kick you out of the country or anything.
You don't speak English, get out.
But you might want to have some more, it's kind of fun to play with like more colorful expressions, especially if you are planning to go to visit or to live in an English speaking country. It can help you maybe to feel a little bit more natural, you know, so you don't, so you feel a little bit more integrated into different situations. So again, up to you whether or not you want to use these, but if you're watching TV series, if you go to an English speaking country, you will hear these a lot. So I think later we'll actually give some specific examples, right? But it can be good just to think of other ways or to look up other ways that you can say, hello, how are you? Kind of these basic things that you'd have in a introductory conversation with someone, right?
It's true. Another example that I just I can think of is usually traditional books, right? Or course books, they teach the question, what time is it, right? What time is it? What time is it? And then if you travel, you might hear someone coming to you and say, hey, do you have the time? Do you have the time?
Yeah.
So if you're just hoping
you're like,
to
do I have
hear
the time for what?
What time is it, right? Maybe you're not going to understand you have the time. Yeah?
So. Yeah, exactly. You could think it's like a whole different question, right?
Yeah, like, oh, time, what, for what? Yeah.
And we did mention grammar as well, and there's certain things with that grammar that like you need to be more flexible with when you're speaking street English, right? So if you learned in school, I've noticed a lot of learners do this as well, is they'll even, with like contractions, for example, contractions is something that native speakers use all the time that you're going to hear used much more than not using contractions if you're watching any TV series or listening to a song. And that I've noticed a lot of learners that will read a contraction and they'll read it as if it weren't contracted. So they'll say, like, they'll see written I apostrophe LL, which is I'll is the contraction, but they'll see that and they'll say, I will. Mm-hmm. So they're still saying it non-contracted. They recognize it, but they're not... they're not processing that as a different sound.
It's true,
right?
Yeah. Another example, which is quite tricky actually, is it will contracted, right?
Oh, yeah.
It'll.
It'll.
Right.
Yeah. So you have an American T there as well. So like, I think contraction, that's it's kind of basic grammar, but it's something that most learners, even some advanced learners, they still haven't really mastered, you know, they haven't really gotten down to naturally use them in their conversations. So that can be a good thing to practice. Something kind of crazy, like an advanced tip that we have is we even have double contractions, which you'll hear in spoken English. So this can be, for example, like saying, he cannot have done that. We'll do a double contraction of, you probably already know that cannot can become can't, but then also you'll know that have can become just a of, like I have becomes I've. But even when we say then the negative, that cannot have can become can of. So it's like, he cannot have done that.
Mm-hmm. That is crazy reduction there, yeah? Can we say that again?
He cannot have done that.
He cannot have. He cannot have done that? Is that it?
Oh, sorry. I didn't reduce that all the way. No, he can have. He can have done that.
Oh, say that again, please.
He can have done that.
He can have. That is hard. Yeah. That is hard. Yeah,
he can have.
He can have done that.
It almost
that,
sounds
right.
It sounds like it's affirmative, right? But it wouldn't grammatically make sense as affirmative.
Okay. Yeah. Crazy.
You could also say this like couldn't have, mm-hmm. wouldn't have, shouldn't have, with all those. That is, could not have, would not have, should not have. Mm-hmm. He'd have, like, which is he would have, becomes he'd have. So it could be like, for example, he'd have gone fishing if it wasn't raining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can do this with the future perfect. So like we will have, I don't know, what's an example with that? We will have finished the movie before he arrives, for example. So he could say, we'll finish the movie before he arrives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost sounds like the have is not even there, you know? It sounds like we'll finish.
It's getting really swollen.
Yeah, we'll finish, but you know, there it's there. Yeah, we'll finish, right? We'll finish the movie.
So we could probably do like a whole podcast just on double contractions.
Yeah, yeah. Many examples.
So, you know, let us know. Shoot us a note on Instagram or on over at reallifeglobal.com if you would like that. Are there any other grammar, street grammar that we should touch on before we move on?
One point that I can think of now is also cutting out the auxiliary sometimes when you ask a question, for example, or, you know, like instead of saying, are you going there? Just saying, hey, you're going there? You're going there? You're going there?
Or just, you're going?
You're going? You're going? Yeah. So, yeah. Cutting out the auxiliary is very common also, in spoken English, in everyday English. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of like, too, we can say, if you're going to say, we have a street reduction that is, I am going to go, can just become, I'm going to go, and then just, I'm going to go. I'm going to go.
Yeah. I'm going to go. Wow. Yeah. And depending on the person, you might even hear, I'm a go, right? I'm a go.
Yeah.
I'm a go.
That gets pretty gangsta, but it's actually becoming more and more common nowadays that you'll hear someone say, I'm a be there in a minute.
Yeah. I'm a be there in a minute. Wow. Yeah. It's good to practice these connections, right? Because you really get your mouth around, you know, all these sounds.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's one of the hard things is that you're mushing a lot of sounds right into like a small space and a lot of consonants and everything. So it's good to practice over and over again so you get your muscles of articulation so that you're able to actually articulate those sounds.
Exactly. So yeah, again, it goes back to practice, right?
So we promised to give you some phrases that you can use in a more natural way. But before we do that, we have a shout out to a very special podcast listener and app user.
All right, so the shout out goes to Blen K. And Blen says, the Real Life app was the most interesting, marvelous, and helpful app. Mostly, my listening skills have become impeccable. Furthermore, this app has motivated me to speak with other English learners. All in all, I would like to recommend this app to all English learners. They can get many experiences by using this app.
Amazing. Thanks so much for taking the time, Blen, to leave us that wonderful message and 5-star review. And I'm so glad to hear that the podcast is helping you to improve your listening skills, that you're making friends from around the world. And dear listener, if you haven't used the app yet, then what are you waiting for? Give it a try. You can listen to this podcast with a full transcript, which is really going to help you to understand all of these crazy contractions and everything else that we're teaching you about. So you can download it for free in the Apple app or Google Play Store. And if you enjoy it, then be sure to leave us a 5-star review so we can find you and maybe we'll shout you out next time. That said, let's move into some great expressions that can help you to speak English a little bit more natural, a little bit more street. Just a quick interruption to ask you a question. Do you ever feel frustrated when you are listening to a podcast, watching a TV series, or you are in a conversation in English and you do not understand what is said? Wouldn't it be great if there was some way to understand real English without getting lost and without getting bored? Well, now there is. With our Real Life Native Immersion course, we will take you on a 41-week real-life adventure of the English language, each week exploring a different topic connected to our goal to help you understand and use your English in the real world. Just imagine understanding your favorite TV series without subtitles, or confidently speaking with someone and comprehending everything they say. You can do it, and we're here to help. And the best part is, you can try it for free with our 3-part Power Learning series. Just go to reallifeglobal.com/pod to sign up. That's P-O-D. Or simply click the link in the description of this episode. All right, so we talked about before the very classic thing that people learn in school, which is, hello, how are you? I'm fine. And you? What's a more natural or more colorful way that learners can start saying this to help them have a little bit more confidence, you know, when they're getting into an interaction with someone?
I personally like the question, how's it going? I use that a lot. Hey, how's it going? Yeah. Sometimes I use what's up, right? So how's it going? What's up? How's life? Yeah. These are some alternatives that I can think of.
Yeah. Those are good because they can be used like in any situation. You can reduce it as well. You can say, you know, you can say, how's it going? That's perfectly fine. You can also say, how's it going? And you kind of can, the Z sound from how's connects onto it. And then you drop the G from going, which is quite common. How's it going? Which even in a formal situation, I think you'd hear people say that at work. How's it going? It wouldn't sound informal. That's a great one. One that's really common is what's up. And you just need to be careful here because a lot of learners will think that what's up means the same as how's it going. But it's not exactly the same because what's up is like asking what's happening, you know, what's new. So you shouldn't respond by saying I'm fine or I'm good or I'm great. You should respond by saying, you know, probably the most common response to what's up is just not much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm not doing much.
Would it be okay to say nothing much as well?
No, nothing much. I don't think so. That sounds kind of weird to me. Nothing much. I don't know if it would be incorrect, but it sounds a bit off to me.
So you would say not much.
Yeah, not much.
Say, hey, what's up? Not much.
Right? Exactly.
Right.
If you want to expand on that, I mean, it also depends like who you're talking to. Maybe if it's someone you don't know that well or that you're a little bit apathetic towards, then you give it's kind of a flat response, you know? But if you're wanting to expand more, then you could say, maybe you're like on the phone or something, you're talking to someone and they say, what's up? You say, oh, I'm just cooking, or I'm just was about to take the dog out or something like that, you know, to describe what you're doing in this moment.
Yeah. You know, this question reminds me of The Office, you know, because they have this joke with what's up, yeah? What's up? You know?
Was that?
Oh, man, yeah.
I think that's from like Wayne's World as well or something, right? Where there's like the whole thing like, what's up?
They also do that? Oh.
We'll have to like look up or link that in the show notes because now it's been a while since I've seen that movie, but I think that there's like some scene like that. And there are also some like fun ways that you can say that, like what's cracking?
Mm.
Have you heard that one before?
Yeah, what's cracking?
Which is another way to say like what's happening, what's cracking? Or instead of saying how's it going, you can say how's it hanging?
Mm-hmm.
There are like tons of, I actually did like a video, I think it's like a 40-minute video that's kind of like a crash course on how to have a perfect introduction with someone that gives you like tons of different ways that you could say this that we'll link in the show notes. So often people might say I'm fine and you, right? So what's another way that someone could say that?
I would say I'm doing well, for example. Yeah, it's a variation, right, of I'm fine, I'm doing well, I'm great.
I think it's going to depend a lot too on the situation you're in and who you're talking to, right? Because again, if you're more apathetic, then you could say, I'm fine, I'm well, I'm good, all's good. But you know, if you're talking to a friend, you might be more honest with your answer, more specific with your answer. You know, you might say, you know, I'm not so good today, or I'm exhausted, I'm tired. Or you could say something more positive, like I'm fantastic. You know, I just got an A on my English test or something like that that can kind of expand into a conversation.
Yeah, I'm super excited, right?
Exactly, yeah. I'm pumped.
I'm pumped.
I'm stoked.
That's good. That's a good one.
Those are like more creative ways you can say you're excited. Yeah.
Pumped. Nice.
Yeah, obviously if you're at work and stuff, you might have more of like one of the just saying, oh, I'm good, even like I'm great or I'm well. Or you could even say, you know, depending how close you are with people from work, you could say like, you know, so-so, not so great.
I don't know. I feel like that has been kind of changing nowadays, right? I mean, I guess more and more companies are adopting a more casual way of communicating and, you know, interacting among themselves, right?
Right.
So maybe, you know, in the past, some of these more informal phrases and expressions were not acceptable. But nowadays, I feel like, you know, it should be okay, right? In most even work situations, right?
Yeah, I think it's always important to be observant, you know, of like when you're working in a new place, how do people around you speak? How do they ask questions? How do they answer them? Because, you know, then it's, you know, you'll see, are people here in general more formal in the way they speak, or are people here pretty casual? And you can find everything. Yeah, of course. Nowadays, I think in a lot of companies, they want to keep more of a friendly culture, you know, so that people don't feel like they have to be in a big, you know, be in a suit and speak to each other like robots in a sense.
Yeah.
But there are still some more traditional companies that they still kind of expect people to put on like really professional face when they come to work. So just be observant to what people around you are doing.
Yeah. So maybe the rule of thumb here would be, when in doubt, yeah, especially if it's your first interaction, yeah, I mean, be formal, right? And then you're going to start observing the person, how the person replies back to you. And then if you feel like the person is communicating in a more casual way, then you can loosen up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can, you know, be more informal, yeah?
Yeah, you probably don't want to like roll into your first day of work saying to your boss, yo, what's hanging, G? Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. First day, yeah, not a good idea, yeah.
But maybe, yeah, if you're, this is like The Office, it's like Michael Scott, right? That's the boss from The Office. if your boss is like him, then maybe it'll work.
Yeah, true.
What about if someone's talking about, I don't know, what they did this weekend and they went to go see a movie and they're wanting to say something about that movie that's not just like, you know, the movie was interesting or the movie was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you could say that the movie was fantastic again. It was amazing. It was superb, you know, it was super. Yeah. That I think I wouldn't say that actually, you know, superb. Would you say that? Superb?
Superb. Yeah, you could say that. It was superb. It's like, it was the best, you know? And what about if it's the opposite? If it was just like a horrible movie, a waste of time?
I guess that is a good phrase. Hey, how was the movie? Oh, it was a waste of time. You could answer that way.
It bored me to tears.
It bored me to tears, yes. Or I was bored to death, right?
Bored to death, yeah. I walked out.
That's a good one.
Hopefully that doesn't happen to you. I'm spending a lot on like a movie.
You know, this word is a little bit more advanced, but I actually like to use it because it's so powerful. Like, you know, hey, how was the movie? Ah, it was excruciating. Like, you know.
Yeah. That's great. It's like going to the dentist, right?
Yeah,
excruciating.
Exactly. Like it's
painful.
It was torture. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good one to use too. If you're like, I don't know, maybe you have like a work meeting or something, and it's just, you know, nothing's happening and everything. You just say, oh, meeting was excruciating. You know, just felt like it went on forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe not to say it to the people you work with, but you know, when you get home and you're talking to your husband or your wife, you can say that the meeting was excruciating.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Some other common phrases that you have that we use all the time, right? Or thank you, you're welcome. Both of those I think are perfectly fine. But if people want to be a little bit more creative in their speaking, what are some alternatives they could use?
Anytime, no problem. Be my guest.
Yeah, I like that no problem because that can be reduced just to like no prob.
No prob.
Or in parts of the States too, people might say no problemo.
Uh-huh.
Which is, it's funny because it's like trying to sound Spanish.
Yeah.
But it's not even like the right word that, you know, it ends with an A in Spanish. So it's problema.
Uh-huh.
So Americans will say it, no problemo.
No problemo. Okay. That's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
Or no worries.
Mm-hmm. No worries. That's good. Yeah. Would you say that don't mention it is more formal or informal, Ethan? Don't mention it.
I think don't mention it's a little bit more formal.
Yeah, right.
But I think you could use it in either situation, but I think no worries, no problem, they're a little bit more informal mm-hmm. than don't mention it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So for thank you, you could say like, thanks a million, right? Or I really appreciate it.
Thanks a bunch.
Thanks a bunch.
Thanks a lot.
Like in emails, one I like to use a lot too is like, thanks in advance. When you're writing someone kind of like asking for something or asking for information or something, that's one that I kind of like to use toward the end is like, you know, thanks in advance.
How about many thanks?
Many thanks, yeah. And I think those ones are really important because we're in most English speaking cultures, we're overly polite. And so you need to use thank you and sorry and you're welcome like all the time. Mm-hmm. So having different ways that you can say that, so you're not just always saying the same thing, will be helpful.
So guys, the last one that we have here is the phrase, I need to be prepared. I hear that from students all the time, especially my Brazilian students, right? They say, oh yeah, I need to be prepared. It's not wrong, but you know, a more casual, natural way to say that would be, I gotta get ready. You know, so instead of I need to, We go back to those reductions we were discussing earlier, right, Ethan? I've got to, yeah? So I gotta. And then we say get ready, which is to be prepared or to prepare, right? So you see, I need to be prepared sounds very different from I gotta get ready.
Right. It's a great example. Yeah, I gotta get ready for work. I gotta get ready for my game. I gotta get ready to go to the gym. That's a really great one. Amazing. So hopefully some of these phrases, you can start using them right away. And like we've been saying, you know, just practice, observe what you're hearing other people use when you're watching a TV series. See how are they saying hello to each other? How are they saying goodbye? How are they saying sorry? How are they saying thank you? And if you're living in another country and stuff, observing people around you at work and in different situations, I think that's one of the best tools that you can really have in your belt, is just to observe, you know, observe how people reduce their speech, observe the language being used. And you can try to replicate that, practice it yourself. And you don't necessarily need to speak this way, but you definitely need to be able to understand it if you want to be a successful advanced English speaker.
That's it. Amazing.
So thanks so much for joining us on the Real Life English Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you next week. 1, 2, 3.
Ah, yeah.
Hey again, I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. Don't be a stranger. You can find all the notes, like vocabulary, links, and more for this lesson on our blog at reallifeglobal.com. And connect with us and on Instagram at reallife.english for even more fun English recommendations. Do you want to continue your learning and get confident, fluent English? Then I have a couple great recommendations for you. First of all, check out our YouTube channel, Learn English with TV Series, where you can have fun learning to understand fast-speaking natives with your favorite movies, series, and more without getting lost, without missing the jokes, and without subtitles. Second, if you like our podcast, then our real-life native immersion course is perfect for you. It is the next best thing to studying abroad in an English-speaking country. Try it for free with our 3-part power learning series. Just go to reallifeglobal.com/pod to sign up. Finally, if you are enjoying our podcast, then please assist us in helping more people go beyond the classroom and live their English. You can do this by sending a link to this podcast to a friend, or by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. We might even shout you out on the podcast. Stay healthy and safe, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Aw, yeah.